In recent months, the U.S. administration has chipped away at public health interventions addressing substance use disorders and the opioid crisis. These actions have included measures weakening harm reduction strategies. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Joshua Barocas, an associate professor of medicine at the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus. Dr. Barocas has written a perspective article about the erosion of harm reduction in the United States. Dr. Barocas, broadly, how is harm reduction defined?
There are a lot of ways that we can define harm reduction. The one that I generally think is the best is via the Drug Policy Alliance, which says it's a set of ideas and interventions that seek to reduce the harms associated with both drug use and punitive drug policies. It includes anything from syringe service programs to naloxone distribution to decriminalization of drugs.
So, what evidence is there to support the benefits of these various kinds of harm reduction programs?
We've had more than 40 years of evidence going back to the 1980s when the first syringe exchanges were put in place to combat the HIV epidemic. And over the last 40 some odd years, we've seen that syringe service programs have, in the presence of them, provided sterile injection equipment and access to treatment. So that people can reduce their risk of HIV, they can reduce their risk of overdose. We've seen naloxone distribution and overdose education implemented broadly across states, cities, and the US, which have led us to seeing decreases in overdose deaths in recent years. So we really have almost a half century of data suggesting that when we meet people where they are with the tools that they need to stay alive, to make sure that they are living their healthiest life, it actually helps reduce harms.
And then, what actions has the current administration taken that have affected access to these harm reduction services?
I would say that there have been a few different instances in which this administration has profoundly impacted our ability to provide harm reduction services. The first is just with the defunding of some of the centers at the CDC. They have dismantled the Office of Infectious Disease and HIV/AIDS Policy. They've closed the HIV prevention branches. These are critical parts of the CDC. Because they provide us surveillance data, overdose data. Many of these services are no longer online. And so we actually don't know where we should be targeting different distribution, for example, of naloxone. That's number one. Number two is in recent months, there's been defunding, major cuts and layoffs to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, affectionately called SAMHSA. One of the big roles of SAMHSA is to collect data on drug use and current drug practices. That has been dismantled. There's a huge communication void now for community organizations trying to mitigate the adverse effects of substance use. And I think the thing that we want to talk the most about right now is the most recent executive order. This focused on homelessness and civil commitment. It was issued on July 24th, 2025, but it explicitly calls out and prohibits SAMHSA from discretionary grants being used to fund harm reduction activities. Proposed a freeze on federal funding to organizations that provide what is termed drug paraphernalia. And I think most frighteningly, it threatens legal actions against harm reduction organizations. And it's very vague in what it really is trying to get at, if it's really trying to get at issues around homelessness, or if this is truly an attack on harm reduction, like syringe service programs or overdose education and naloxone distribution. If this is an attack on wound care that's provided by street outreach, because all of this is harm reduction. And the wording in that executive order makes it seem like we could be facing some severe cuts and potentially legal action against organizations who are even providing sterile water or saline because that could promote drug use.
So how is that vagueness or that uncertainty affecting the programs and services that are available now?
This has impacted programs on the ground in a couple ways. First and foremost, there have been substantial cuts already, and I know that many syringe service programs who are utilizing federal dollars had to cut staff, had to cut hours, and had to cut services, which means that there are now people who have been utilizing, say, syringe service programs who can't get access. This is a huge problem when we're trying to combat infective endocarditis and skin and soft tissue infections and HIV and hepatitis C outbreaks that we continually see. So we see programs having to cut services already. Second is we are seeing people more and more afraid of utilizing those services for fear that they might be caught up in something that's going to get them in trouble. And so we're seeing decreases in certain places in the US of uptake. So these two factors where we're instilling fear and we're actually cutting services or scaling back services could have profound effects on our ability to provide optimal care for a rather large population in the US.
In a related perspective article, Barsky and colleagues describe ongoing litigation pertaining to overdose prevention centers. The case is United States versus Safe House. What kinds of legal and political barriers have affected those facilities?
I think that the future of overdose prevention centers is very uncertain at this point. And just to clarify, these are sites that provide naloxone and other services that we have open in New York specifically. We've seen that in New York, they have averted thousands of instances of public drug use, and they have averted hundreds of overdoses since they opened. Yes. There's some legal uncertainty around whether overdose prevention centers can operate because people can use their own substances on site, making sure then that they don't actually have a fatal overdose. It really remains to be seen whether OPCs will have actual legal action taken against them, especially if they can't conform to the administration's definition of what they would call acceptable harm reduction activities.
You say in your article that beyond these federal actions, state governments have also undercut harm reduction. So what's happening in that area?
There's a big push across many states, and there should be, to try to decrease overdose death. We have seen enormous strides over the last 3 years, really, where overdose deaths have actually started to come down. A lot of this is attributable to harm reduction, to getting people on the medications for opioid use disorder, and to getting them retained on those medications. Several states have imposed penalties for fentanyl possession in recent years. My own state of Colorado being one of them, where small amounts of fentanyl possession have actually become a felony rather than a misdemeanor. Why this matters is we understand that we all want to target drug traffickers, make sure that drugs aren't necessarily available at every turn. When we felonize possessions of small amounts of drugs, what we're doing is targeting the people who are using, not necessarily the drug traffickers. So we're actually criminalizing or further criminalizing drug use and a chronic disease of substance use disorders. This has happened in Alabama, like I said, in Colorado, South Carolina, various other places. There was one instance in Oregon where they worked to get drugs decriminalized. Unfortunately, there was a lot of pushback, and that has since been reversed. It all comes down to this idea that we need to take a tough love approach to substance use. And time again, over the last 50 years, we've seen that that tough love approach is actually quite harmful. That really we need to meet people with compassion and care and open minds, as opposed to policies that punish people. They are directly at odds with each other. And unfortunately, we're seeing different states, even cities, enacting some of these policies that I fear are just going to further stigmatize substance use, further stigmatize people who use substances, and we're going to see a reversal in that overdose trend that we have all been so optimistically watching.
Finally, how should advocates and organizations working in this field move forward, given these recent policy decisions and this continued uncertainty about the permissibility of many of these harm reduction activities?
I think it's important that we, as clinicians, as people in healthcare, and as advocates, remember that our North Star is our patients. And the goal of any patient interaction is to provide people first with dignity and compassion, to use evidence to treat them, and really to improve their health and help them live the healthiest lives that they can. So for clinicians, that means continually providing the community resources to the patients that are coming into their offices, being open to prescribing buprenorphine or even prescribing giving Narcan during an office visit, because right now that's not under attack and we can all do our part in our own office. Or if you're an inpatient provider, we can do that there too. I think that the more we can speak out about harm reduction and these approaches, harm reduction interventions being about patient autonomy, about provider autonomy, and providing our patients with the best possible care is one way forward. Speaking in a unified voice. This is yet another way that this administration seems to be coming into our patient encounters. That's dangerous. And if we can all see what's being eroded and speak up about it, then I think we have a chance.
Thank you, Dr. Brokus.